Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 161 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Sunday evening. In fact, it's currently the bottom of the eighth inning. The Braves lead the Mets by a 7-3 score. So if something crazy happens over the next few minutes, we will definitely break back in to talk about it. But for time reasons, we are recording because this was a late game and there was a rain delay to boot. So myself and my guest this week, I guess co-host, whatever you want to say, Eric Cole is here, and we're talking about the Atlanta Braves. So what's up, man?
I feel like that every time there's like a rain-delayed game that's late is a day where I'm going to have to do a podcast. I'm beginning to think, and it's not just this one. It's happened on Road to Atlanta, like both iterations of it. It seems like every time that there's that's happening, there's like some late game that's happening, and it's – I don't know. I feel like I'm a little cursed.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I mean, they started this thing off at like 7:35, 7:40, so it wasn't – wasn't crazy, but even, you know, all the beat writers, Gabe and McAlpin and those guys were throwing the frustration around as the rain was coming down earlier in the day. And of course, the headline in the sports world was Tiger Woods winning the Masters, which is too perfect given everything that happened.
It really is.
And the crossover with the Braves.
I was driving back from Atlanta when they were calling the Masters. I was just laughing the whole time, like just trying to imagine what's going on Twitter while I was driving.
Yeah, Scott got some love, as you might imagine. There were some people shouting Scott out for his contributions to Tiger winning the Masters, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, you're welcome, Tiger. You're welcome, Tiger. You're welcome.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We could probably talk about the Masters for a while. That's a big sporting event in my life, but we're gonna leave it for now. You can probably get that content elsewhere, but it was cool that Tiger won, considering all the Brave stuff that has happened. All right, let's start off the pod, and hopefully when we're done with this topic, the game will be over. We'll talk about the game as well. But Ozzy Albies signed an extension this week. It was on Thursday. We couldn't do an emergency podcast, but you and the guys over at Road to Atlanta did cover this a little bit that evening, which I appreciate. So if you missed that podcast, go back and listen to it. It's on the same feed as this one, and it's definitely worth listening to, independent of Ozzy Albies' talk for all the minor league, rumblings and information that you could possibly need. So all that to say, I haven't talked about this yet in a public forum, and I haven't written about it or anything. So I'm going to ask you first, just for your top-level thoughts. When you saw the deal come down, did you have the same reaction that everybody else did? Was that it was basically seemed like that was going to be like a misprint and where something was gone terribly wrong in the math somewhere? Because that's kind of where everybody that I saw and was following live on Twitter kind of had the same reaction of that can't possibly be right.
I think the first tweet that I made about it was that I thought that Anthopoulos had dirt on Albies or something, because we were talking about this in the chat in the Talking Chalk Slack room, is that, you know, the extension, like there's this extension that's out there. We don't know the amounts yet, and we're all kind of guessing. And it seemed like a lot of people were in the same $60 million range. He wasn't going to get as much money as Acuna, but, you know, we thought that somewhere maybe that $60 million range, considering, you know, he had the extra year. And if you're going to do the extension, maybe you did it in an extra free agent year. So it was going to be around that number seemed about right. You know, you could quibble over, you know, how much over or under. But when I saw it was $35 million, first, I thought it was either fake or someone had, like, you know, just put a 3 instead of a 5 or a 6 or something. But that's what the number is, and I'm just going to get this out of the way. This is obviously a great deal for the Braves, and they do this deal 100 times out of 100. Like, no question in my mind. And, you know, any negativity about, like, the overall, like, how this deal is necessarily fair to Ozzy or players like Ozzy does not change the fact that the Braves should have absolutely done this deal if it was available to him and Ozzy was willing to sign it.
Yeah, I mean, I want to do this from kind of every angle, and that is a good thing for you to lay out at the top of this thing. we'll go through it all, to be honest with you. The details on this, by the way, this year, $1 million for Ozzie. 2020, $1 million. 2021, $3 million. And 22, $5 million. 23, $7 million. 24, $7 million. 25, $7 million. That's the end of the contract. And then you have two club options for $7 million each. 2026 with a $4 million buyout. And then 2027, a $7 million option. That is a long, long time from now. And $7 million options are comical. That kind of made this deal even more ridiculous.
That's what was crazy to me. I thought the two options at the end were going to be like, you know, like 15 plus or something like that.
Well, that's what they would possibly, you know, any rational thought would be that those options were pretty expensive. I'm going to bring up a comp a little bit later of Scott Kingery. And it's his deal with Philly was less. Overall in terms of guaranteed money, but his club options were much, much more lucrative at the end. And he had not played a single baseball game to hit at that point in time in the major leagues when he signed it. So the club options are insane. It's sort of the same thing as Acuna deal. I know we talked about this a lot, in terms of Ronald Acuna previously, you know, and kind of hilariously on that podcast that we did the deep dive on Ronald Acuna, I said at that moment that if the Braves had signed that exact deal for Ozzie Albies, I would be thrilled with that deal. And then he signed for a third of the guaranteed money.
Yeah, so that's, yeah.
It's just pretty insane in a lot of ways, and that's kind of the top line. I'm glad you led with that, just because it's clearly a bargain deal for the Braves. It's incredibly team-friendly. I want to be sensitive to all the sides of this thing. I know people were bothered by my language that I used the last time talking about Ronald Acuna and calling it a heist. I want to be very clear. No one is making these guys do it. It's not a robbery. It's robbery in the sense of it's a great deal for the Braves, but that's more of a slang term in this way. I'm not saying that he was actually robbed. Just want to be clear. On that.
Well, there are just some people that are just waiting for someone to say something that could be perceived a certain way based from certain people, so that they can get all up in arms about.
Well,
and that's
fine. I mean, it's not a big deal actually. I mean, I got a lot of people that were reasonable, honestly, that I talked to more about Ozzie deal. With that, we're just had like, I guess, more of a misunderstanding with my language. So I wanted to be clear and just say, like, just as we said repeatedly with the Acuna deal, I understand why the player would sign the contract. Ronnie, it's even more easy to see. He signed for $100 million guaranteed. That's a lot of money. obviously, $35 million is a lot of money as well. It's not $100 million. Crazily, as much as we were favorable in saying the team-friendly deal and sort of the team-friendly nature of the Acuna deal, this one's even more team-friendly in my opinion, which is kind of crazy. And just for a little bit of context here, Jeff Passan, I know I sort of use this example a little bit, talking about it on Twitter, and people push back, like, that's just one man's opinion. I'm like, no, it's really not. But Jeff Passan from ESPN.
Hold on. There is I think John Heyman is the only person that I saw that was a national writer who, by the way, seems to be more of a mouthpiece for agents than anyone else, than anything else. Like, that's the only national writer that wasn't like, dear God, this is really the extension they got Albies for. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, just you can see all sides and understand that, yes, you're guaranteeing $35 million to a player that is still very young and maybe could flatten out. But in Albies' case, he's already proven at the major league level. I know he cooled off last year, but last year was his first full season, and he was definitely worth an eight figure salary as a rookie. And that's like the mild interpretation. That's just like the most pessimistic way you can put it. So anyway, Jeff Passan, who is, if not the number one, he's definitely in the top two with Ken Rosenthal in terms of guys who are respected as reporters in the industry, breaking news, all that fun stuff, has great sources. Clearly, Passan, I won't read the entire thing. But this is the headliner is that he's now heard from executives, players, analytics people, development people, and scouts who are saying the same thing, and that is that Ozzie Albies' extension might be the worst contract ever for a player. That is not hyperbole. He went on to say that at worst, he's a solid everyday player, which I agree with. That's me. I'm agreeing with that. That's just me saying this. But from there, Passan said, likely you're an all-star caliber, and he gives away four free agent years, and keeps Albies under team control for his entire prime, basically up to his age 30 season, maxing out at $45 million over 9 years. And I quote, it's staggering in every respect, end quote. So I know that's one person, but he's also gathering a lot of information, and he was not alone by any means.
No.
Nate Silver, who used to do this for a living, baseball, before he moved into the politics realm, said he went a little bit further than I probably would go and say, He thinks that Ozzy's agency basically should fire him as a client for accepting the deal. That's pretty strong, but it's just someone who is respected. You know, Nate used to do this. That's where he made his bones. Someone who understands baseball. And the last one before I hand it to you again, Eric, I promise I'm not going to be this long-winded all the time.
Oh, you're fine. I like listening to you.
Dan Zimborski, who is well known in talking chop circles, he's been in the comments before, a prominent writer, Fangraphs, ESPN, big time numbers guy, and he's the creator of Zips, the projection model. He had over the nine years, Ozzie Albies projected for $282 million over 9 years, and one more time, $282 million. And I understand that that is a projection right now that could obviously change, and you would never, most extensions wouldn't cover all that money, but the gap between 35 and 282, or sorry, 45 and 282 is unbelievable. That's probably the way I put that. So that's a lot of information, and there's plenty more. I left probably five examples on the cutting room floor that I didn't want to use on this podcast. But if I throw all that back to you, Eric, where do we go from here?
Well, I think for starters, that there is the one narrative that made some amount of sense to me in terms of like this whole Braves payroll. You know, one of the reasons that they maybe didn't want to make a long-term commitment was because there was a certain amount of uncertainty when you have guys like between, you know, basically most of the pitching staff, and you have guys like Ronald Acuña and Ozzie Albies, who are both young, going to hit arbitration, you know, in the next couple years. And could make a lot of money in arbitration, because we've seen really big arbitration raises recently. You know, Mookie Betts got a bunch of money. Nolan Arenado got a bunch of money before he signed his extension. I mean, we're seeing, and you know, Chris Bryant's going to get paid, even though, you know, he hasn't been quite as good, and he's not in quite the same trajectory as he was on. You know, there's people are getting a lot of money, and there's a certain amount of truth to the fact that you have to kind of account for that if you want to, you know, structure your payroll the way you want to. But now the Braves have no excuses. I mean, like, they'll have Fulte in arbitration. You know, I guess maybe, you know, I guess Dansby could be a minor issue in terms of arbitration and something like that. They have no excuses as to like what their long-term commitments are going to be and how to pay these guys. They have, you know, they have Ronnie and Ozzy under a contract, you know, until, you know, they're close to 30 years old. That at this point, they can't say, sorry, we're just not sure how much we're going to have to spend on these young guys. They know exactly how much, and it's very, very little. People were talking – the narrative that I didn't enjoy listening to on Twitter when this first happened was that all these people were complaining about them saving money in the offseason. Look what they did with that money. This was not them. This was not them using that money.
No.
This was them saving more money.
No, I mean, it's a credit to – if you want to give Liberty Media and Anthopoulos some credit for investing in the future, and, you know, I guess, you know, in a perfect world, there is minuscule risk, I will say. But I guess if you want to be literal about it, there is, I guess, a little bit of risk. Every single franchise in Major League Baseball would sign these contracts. Even the poorest of teams that have low payrolls would sign these two contracts because they are so incredibly team friendly. But if you want to give some credit, that's okay. But to your point, and we said this about Acuña as well, this does not absolve anything from this past winter. I know it's a great PR thing. It's a great thing for the organization to lock these guys up. Again, it's a great thing for the organization, point blank, period, to lock these guys up for the future. But what it doesn't do is, A, forgive them for the winter, because they didn't spend any more money now. Their payroll is still lower than it was last year. Nothing has changed about that. And B, it doesn't make them spend in the future. It allows them to spend. If they want to spend more, it definitely will open up a lot of doors for the future to have these guys on bargain contracts. But as we've seen now this year, that doesn't mean they're going to spend. I mean, we can assume they'll spend all day long, but you know, all the shopping every aisle stuff, and this they were ready to spend in 2019, that didn't happen. I understand this is great PR for them, and again, it's fantastic for the organization moving forward. They still didn't spend the money this year, and they're still running a lower payroll in 2019. So throw that narrative out the window for me.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I thought it was really disingenuous, the people that were saying that. You know what I mean? Like, just like it was like basic math wasn't being done. But that's the other point that I kind of want to get, that the other side of this is like, you know, obviously this deal can be perceived in a vacuum as like not being good for Ozzy the player or Ozzy the person. But the one thing that I've thought about was that Aussie in particular, well, two things. One is that we're kind of existing in a weird world where a lot of these extensions are being signed right now by young players because there's a very large amount of uncertainty in the labor market as to whether or not there's going to be a strike once the CBA expires. And that's because of how free agency's been handled, how young players have been compensated. And if you're a young player and you think that you foresee a strike coming down the line, you need to get your money up front because you don't really know what things are going to look like after that CBA negotiations happen, whether or not there's a work stoppage or not. The other thing is that in Ozzie's case, oh, by the way, the Braves just won 7-3, by the way. And in Ozzie's case, he's probably more sensitive to the non-guaranteed money that it comes from those first 6 years or so in baseball, because he's a guy that had a pretty severe injury in the minor leagues. He basically broke the tip of his elbow off on a swing, and it wasn't like a foul or anything. It just broke. And he, I would imagine, is a little more sensitive to the fact that all it takes is one injury and all these projections and all this talk about how much money he could have made goes out the window, because if he had a career ending injury or something that, you know, hampered his speed, or just, you know, maybe it was a wrist injury that, like, so anything like that, that hampered his production, all of a sudden everything changes. And I could see in his situation where he could be like, look, I have this offer in place. I really want to play with Acuna. I really want to play with this team for a long time. This is the organization I've grown up with, and this is the offer they're willing to make me, and I'm fine with that. I understand it. I mean, it's crazy that he signed it. I'm more surprised that the Braves didn't offer more to start with, but, you know, we don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes in terms of, you know, whether it be finances or whether it be kind of what they value guys at. And more importantly, and this is, I said the same thing when the Acuna deal came down, is that this doesn't mean that in the last year of this contract, this is what Ozzie's going to be making. If Ozzie continues to produce and if Acuna continues to produce and they feel the need that they need to renegotiate things to keep these guys happy, that can still happen too on the flip side.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah, they did that with the Trout deal. They've done that with other – I mean, the deals across baseball, this has happened before. If they want to try to keep a guy for a long time – and they want to kind of make them happy, and they want to kind of work things around, this is not something that's written in stone necessarily. It's just a guarantee for the player. And again, it's a little bit different when it's free agency, when like they feel like they have to accept a bad deal because no one else is offering anything. And it feels like, you know, that all that collusion stuff, like, you know, everyone's offering me the same deal, I guess I have to take this one. This is an extension. These guys didn't have to take this. So I'm just more genuinely surprised that Ozzie took it more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's been out there is, like, anyone is the, I guess the, I don't want to use narrative again, but I guess I can't think of a better word. It's just saying that anyone who criticizes the deal on the player side is, like, belittling Albies. And it's not that. It's not criticizing Albies at all. I would criticize his agent, to be honest with you. I think it's really bad agent work by whoever's representing him, that I will say. But to everything that you said, the injury, the non-care, you know, all the, this is real money, and he's now, you know, him and his family, he even said in his press conference that his family's now, you know, it was about him, his family being safe, I believe is the word that he used and set up that way. Yep. I totally get that. Again, I said the same thing with Acuna. From the player standpoint, Acuna, I went as far as to say that I can't say that I wouldn't have accepted the deal, because, you know, $100 million is $100 million. You can know what your market value is, but if somebody puts $100 million in your face, you know, I have no problem with someone taking it. That doesn't change the fact that it's team friendly and to a comical degree, but I understand that Albies is more team friendly because of just the sheer numbers of it. But as you again mentioned, the injury is something we have to keep in mind here, and it's a lot of money, man. $35 million is a lot of money. So nobody's mad at Ozzie. Like, I hope he's happy about it. I think he appears to be happy about it. So no shade whatsoever at Albies. I think it's bad agent work, and I think it's not good for, you know, labor stuff in a big picture sense. I said the same thing about Acuna, and this one's actually probably worse. And that was a lot of the stuff that you were reading. You know, people that do this professionally, that analyze this stuff, were basically saying this is really, really bad for players in general. That does not mean it's bad for Albies, because he gets this money. But without going too deep into this and saying it over and over again, it's just not great for a guy to sign for a fraction of his market value, which is what he basically did here. So I get it.
I'm gonna break in for a second. Something pretty hilarious happened.
Uh-oh.
Major League Baseball just tweeted out, huge day for the @Braves # Sunday Night Baseball. And what do we have here? The Tiger Woods meme staring right at me.
You're kidding.
I am not.
The official account?
Oh yeah, the official account. I'm looking at Tiger Woods in a Braves hat too, and
oh,
it has.
Oh my god! Sorry, people have already seen this when they're listening to this, but I have nothing to say about that. I mean, I feel like we should patch Scott in. I don't even know where Scott is, but that is unbelievable.
That's too good.
Every time it reaches for a different place, like, you know, the Braves official account tweeted it out last time. Bowman tweeted it out for the first time today as part of the rain delay thing.
Oh yeah, no, the Braves tweeted out a picture of Tiger in a Braves hat, congratulating him on winning the Masters too today. So.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. So yeah, we're getting derailed. That was a good break in. Okay, where were we? Oh, anyway, but yeah, all that to say, you know, shouts to Ozzy. I'm happy for him. Totally, he's now set financially, presumably for life, and that's a really, really cool thing to have happen for anyone. That doesn't change the fact that it's team friendly, but it is worth emphasizing that over and over again, that no one made him sign it. He signed it, and he's an adult, and he knows what he's doing, and he just guaranteed himself a lot of money. So no shade towards Ozzy.
I want to ask you a question. Given the context of what we're working in right now, would you extend Dansby and or Camargo, and what do you think those extensions would look like if they happened?
Yeah, I was talking to someone that's been on this podcast. I will not say who. It's not you, and it wasn't Scott. Someone that is not right for talking chop about this exact thing. And we were saying, basically, that there are five or six players in the organization that I would do this exact same contract for right now. If it was a yes or no, if it was a yes or no proposition, here's the contract. Would you say yes or no to this? If you're the Braves, I would say yes for five or six guys. That includes Dansby. That includes Camargo. I would do this deal for Austin Riley, and I'm not even an Austin Riley guy. I would do this deal for Austin Riley today.
Yeah.
Pre arrival in the Major League Baseball. That tells you, because I'm on record as like not being super high on Austin Riley, and I would do this deal for Austin Riley right now. Pitchers. I mean, Folty's a very obvious one. You would do that in a second for Folty.
Yeah, he won't do. I mean,
he
based
wouldn't
on
do
how,
that. I wouldn't think. But I was just saying
the way
Ozzy,
arbitration's gone for him. There's no way.
I agree. Yeah. No, he wouldn't. I'm just saying. I think, you know, the more interesting one for me, because I think it's kind of a no-brainer for Swanson and Camargo, frankly.
Yeah.
Maybe you disagree, but before we get to that, I think you might consider it for like some of the young pitchers, like Tukey or Kyle Wright. Like, I know that's riskier. That's where it becomes more of a risk.
Pitchers are trickier. Yeah,
I know it is, and that's why I'm saying this. It's definitely more of a risk, but at the exact same time, that just the fact that I'm even debating this, and I am way on record as saying pitchers are something that I don't want to invest in, and big money contracts, all that fun stuff. That kind of tells you how friendly this deal is that I would even consider giving it to a pitcher. I think it's honestly a no-brainer for Swanson. And Swanson is not as good as Albies, at least he hasn't been to this point in time. And that tells you, like, if you could get Swanson for this exact same deal, you would do it immediately and not even think about it.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's not as good as Ozzy. At least he hasn't been so far.
No, he's not, but he's been a reasonably productive player. He's a guy that I don't hate having on the team. You know what I mean? for that amount of money, all day.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely is crazy. I know I brought up Kingery earlier, just for specifics. I want to bring up two comparisons to kind of put a cap on this a little bit. Scott Kingery, who was a bad major leaguer last year, just for the record, but
he was quite bad. Yeah.
Before he ever played a game, he signed for 6 years and $24 million guaranteed with the Phillies. Then he had three club options, bringing the deal to a total of $65 million total. So three club options for a total of $41 million in 3 years. Those might get declined if he's this bad, obviously, but at the very least, $24 million. He had not played a game. He was almost 24 when he signed it, so he was significantly older than Ozzy, who'd already played a full season of very, very good baseball. And the deal was signed a year ago. Generally, deals go up, not down. And that's one comparison. The one that's Brave-centric that I saw somebody pass along that was actually interesting to me that I was not thinking about. How about Andrelton Simmons? Simmons signed for 7 years and $58 million. He had played 206 games with the Braves. 5 years later, where you would think the deals would be going up, Ozzy had played almost the exact same amount of games, 225, so 19 more games than Simmons. And he actually has been better by Fangraphs WAR than Simmons was. And he got 7 years, $35 million. So he got $23 million less of guaranteed money than Andrelton Simmons. And he's been better than Simmons. And he was younger than Simmons. And that's before you even consider the team options, which are, again, incredibly team-friendly. So that's sort of the last point that I wanted to make. Like, and by the way, at least I did, we all praised the Simmons deal. there was not a lot of negative blowback for the Simmons deal, and that's worked out great, by the way.
He can't hit, and you know.
But even that, even if you thought he couldn't hit, the deal was so cheap that everybody liked it. Like it wasn't like this where everyone was like in universal approval of it, like Albies. But in general, that had a positive approval rating, and that was 5 years ago for a lot more money for a guy who literally, you know, we weren't sure he could hit. I mean, obviously he was an all-world defender, you know, Ozzie Smith level defender, and we knew that. But again, Ozzie was younger and better, and signed for less. it's so crazy.
It's great. I mean, and again, great for the Braves. Ozzie is guaranteed to be a millionaire. There's not like, so that's obviously great, but I'm still kind of just genuinely shocked and surprised that he signed it. But again, you know, if that's the decision he wants to make, I am more than happy to have him as our starting second baseman for, you know, the next, you know, close to a decade. I'm in for it, 'cause you know, he's a ton of fun to watch. I'm really happy he's going to be a Brave. I think he's going to outperform his contract by a lot, and that's, you know, that's going to be a really good thing for the Braves going forward, assuming they actually, you know, do something with this gift that they were given.
Yeah, we can probably leave it there. Last thing, Anthopoulos had a funny quote people sort of latched onto, saying that there was still a lot of room left for 2019 to add.
I saw that.
People didn't like that very much, and I understand why. I have made plenty of fun of the shop in any aisle stuff for the last 2 years. And I endorse making fun of this as well, frankly. It is true, though. They do have money, and if you want to give them some credit, they did add money last year in the middle of the season. And I actually expect them to buy at some point this year, somewhere. It won't make up for it, but they do have the money.
Yeah, and the problem is like, I believe Anthopoulos in that I do think that he's looking for ways to add, but I also think that they have very rigid evaluations on like how much they value players at versus what their contracts are. Like I think it's very rigid. And I think it's been part of the problem. It's just that this is what we're willing to offer. End of story.
That's how you end up with a bullpen that is the way this bullpen is.
Oh, it's pretty brutal. I mean, now some moves were made to hopefully make those a little better. And there's some moves that could potentially be made going forward, even internally, that could make things better. But the bullpen's pretty brutal right now. But the problem is like, I believe that AA believes what he's saying is that, you know, like, you know, we have this money and I'm intending to, you know, I am willing to use it, but it really comes across as insincere when you say it, especially it's like kind of, it sounds like a soundbite and it sounds like some, you know, it sounds like something that you're kind of coached to say, you know what I mean? 'Cause you know what the fan base is upset about. And at some point you just kind of need to figure out how to either change that narrative and like figure out a different way to present the information. Because when you keep saying we can still add, you start getting collective eye rolls from the fan base. And it's just, I don't know. It's just not the greatest look to me.
Yeah. I get why he said it. I just wanted to, I had it in the notes and wanted to at least say that out loud, that he expressed that sentiment. Anthopoulos. Anyway, I don't really blame him. That's a different story for a different day, but it's just one of those things. But Ozzie Albies, Cliff Notes version, is he's now locked up for basically, if not all of his prime, most of his prime at fringe starter money, and he's going to be probably a lot better than that. So there you go.
Yep.
And we can leave it there for now. I do want to take a second to tell you guys to subscribe to this podcast, which includes this show, the Talking Chop podcast, and the Road to Atlanta podcast on the same feed. So check us out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Overcast, all those places. We should be anywhere that you'd like to listen to podcasts. If we're not, let me know that, and I will get that fixed. But we'll come back after the short break and talk about the actual rest of the week that took place surrounding the Atlanta Braves.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
All right, Eric, we're back. And now that we're Ozzied out for now.
It's sort of
an interesting week of baseball. I don't want to go we don't have to go line by line through the entire week, but I have some notes on all of the games and some lineup stuff and some injuries and et cetera, et cetera. The big picture, the Braves had a winning week. They had a little bit of a downturn in the middle of the week, and then they finished strong. What are your top line thoughts on what transpired? Because it was sort of a weird one in that they went Colorado back to New York and then sort of up and down, but finished up.
The bullpen's really rough. I mean, it is an adventure. I am sad to say, and it's weird that like Luke Jackson's actually been like one of the guys where, you know, things haven't been quite. He got BABIPped a little bit today, where he had like, you know, like a tough grounder and a blue pit that ended up bringing a couple runs in. But like that, it's kind of hard for that stuff to, you know, be upset about that stuff. But like Chad Sabatka's like been getting hit really hard. Johnny Venters, as much as I want him to come back and be great, he's been really, really bad. He's not, I mean, you know, I just think he's done, and I don't want him to be. I really don't, because coming back from all those arm injuries and he was really good last year too, you know, considering what he was, right? Like, you know,
he needs to be used perfectly at this point. Like, he definitely should never face right-handed batters at any point.
He's been getting roughed up by lefties.
That's what I mean. I mean, to be charitable to Johnny, he needs to be facing lefties only. Like, he got obliterated by Pete Alonso with that deep, deep, deep home run earlier in the week.
I'll let you know when it lands. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad matchup. But even before that, you know, he walked a lefty to lead off the inning. So I'm not trying to absolve him. He's been bad. I hope he's not done. I kind of lean to the area that he might be. But at the very, very least, he needs to be an absolute and utter specialist. And that's being charitable.
Yeah, I mean, just like the way his stuff is moving and just kind of what the pitches are even looking, it doesn't even look like the part of a loogie. You know what I mean? It just doesn't. No. Like, and that's not really something you can really do very much anymore anyway, with the, you know, coming up in, you know, the future anyway, like guys like him are going to be fading out anyway, but it's tough because, you know, you root for a guy like that who's been through everything the way he's been through. But I mean, I just don't see it happening. And it's frustrating because you want him to do well, but you know, Wes Parsons has done well out of the bullpen, and you know, you've seen like decent performances out of Luke Jackson. But other than that, I mean, Vizzy's already on the DL, and was looking a little, you know, it was scary at times. AJ Minter, you hope that he's, you know, kind of back to full strength and performs well. Had a really good ninth inning against the Mets, right? That was he made a pitch. Yeah, it was. Sorry, I was kind of more paying attention to the recording. So, you know, he had a good outing against the Mets, and that's always a good sign because, you know, we need more live arms. I like the arms that they brought up. I like Jacob Webb as a guy who can strike guys out. If you're looking for a guy who won't walk batters, I won't necessarily point you in his direction because he has been known to walk some guys.
That's on brand for this bullpen, to be fair.
Yeah, but he does strike out a bunch of batters, and you know, he's historically done that since he's joined the organization.
No, I mean, and it's just for a bit of clarity, Webb and Dan Winkler were recalled. Yep. When they sent Newcomb down, Newcomb really struggled on Saturday, and he got sick to a 4-0 lead that evaporated in a hurry. Braves won that game, but he was not the reason why they won it, and he was sent down to AAA. And
your boy Tukey was the reason why they won that game.
Yeah, Tukey was fantastic in that game. But Newcomb, I don't want to go too deep into this, but how the mighty have fallen over about a 10-month period. You know, mid-season last year, he was looking the part of like a number 2 starter, and now he's in AAA because he can't throw strikes. So all that to say, and also Arroyas on the IL, which you mentioned briefly. So those guys, you know, Webb and Winkler, fresh arms, if nothing else. And Winkler, we couldn't figure out why he wasn't on the team already. So maybe he'll be his old self. I'm not really sure what that's going to look like. But if nothing else, an infusion of fresh life and I guess some role-defining stuff. Because Minter's now like the closer until Arroyas comes back, if he ever does. Because Arroyas' shoulder, again, I guess he warmed up on Saturday and just couldn't go. Hadn't pitched in a week. And then goes on the IL a week later. It's just always going to be this way, isn't it? Like, it's just never going to be.
I'm just wondering if he's going to pitch much at all this season at this point. You know what I mean? Does that, like, when it's, there's been so little workload and they managed him so carefully and he's still not right. Like, I just don't see it happening. And I think that I would not be surprised if they were to make a trade for a bullpen arm, it happened sooner rather than like at the trade deadline. Cause I mean, they have, you know, they bring up Webb, who honestly is more of a lottery it may or may not work out. Sobotka's kind of the same way. Like, he's in the bullpen now, and at times last year he looked amazing. You know, it's that upper 90s fastball, and you know, when the breaking ball is being thrown for strikes. But then he's had some outings this year where you're just like, oh dear God, please don't just only give up one solo home run. You know what I mean? And he's been really rough. They have Corbin Clouse down in AAA. There is a bit of a problem of there's a bunch of lefties in the bullpen. Now, if you decide to move on from Johnny Venters, that kind of solves part of that problem. But you know, he's a guy that I liked as a relief prospect down in Gwinnett. But if you're not moving these starting pitching prospects that you have into the bullpen, and the Braves just do not seem interested in doing that right now, which has kind of worked out, right? Like, it's kind of, you know, they brought Tukey up that day, and, you know, it was kind of unclear as to kind of when he was going to start and how that was going to work out. And as it turns out, he just took Newcomb's spot in the rotation and performed really well.
Yeah, Tukey was outrageous in that game, which is the reason why the Braves won. Yep. I guess other notes to hit on from the week. This is not going to be a daily game recap podcast, at least until the playoffs arrive again. They do.
Yeah.
Wednesday's game got snowed out in Denver, and that's going to be rescheduled for Monday, August 26th, which is brutal for the Braves because they now have to use one of their few off days down the stretch to fly to Denver in between series in New York and Toronto. They play on Sunday in New York and then Tuesday in Toronto, and they have to go to Denver in between. Granted, it's a day game on Sunday and a night game on Tuesday, but still you have to fly 2,000 miles at least in one direction and then 2,000 miles back. That's kind of brutal. I mean, it's a one-game thing. Maybe they'll leave half the roster at home. It's one of those weird things where, like,
yeah,
I'm sure
the
starting pitchers won't be traveling, but it's just crazy.
Yes. Well, I mean, it can't be as bad as that stretch the Braves had last year where they had, like, two games they had to make up. One was, like, a game against the Cubs.
Oh, they played every day for, like,
yeah, for, like,
5 weeks.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was nuts. But anyway, I just want to at least point that out, that was kind of a brutal scheduling thing. And we'll probably forget that until August. And it's like, why are they playing every day? Oh, yeah, that snow out. Why are they playing their one series of the year in April in Denver? I will never understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, someone just has to do it, and they keep doing it.
But no, they don't know. They don't know. They could play division games in April. It should be a hard and fast rule that the cold weather cities, you can only play a home series if it's against a divisional opponent or someone you play more than once.
I don't hate it.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, oh, who could have ever foreseen a snow out in April in Denver? Like, what are we doing here? Anyway, sorry, I don't want to rant too. And to make it more, I guess it didn't have to be this way. It was the last day of the series, which makes it more unlucky in some ways. It could have been, you know, a doubleheader situation, but they just couldn't do that because it was the last day of the series. So anyway, other things. Back-to-back days, Thursday and Friday, had some ugly starting pitching performances. Kevin Gausman was not very good on Thursday, and then Kyle Wright was not very good at all on Friday. I don't really worry about Wright. He got optioned down as Tukey came up. And Gausman was probably due for one. Like, he was great in his first start and was not so good on Thursday. Anything worry you about those two starts? I know Wright's going to be, you know, he's still a young guy, but was not particularly good in his first couple looks.
Well, we've talked about Wright on the podcast before. My concern has always been that he seems to lose his command the second time through the order. And, like, he'll be great for three innings, and then after that, it's kind of a gamble as to what version of Kyle Wright you get. And it seems like that's continuing the show right now. I'm not sure if it's a fatigue thing or if it's just once he tries to change his approach that second time through, the, you know, trying to incorporate a changeup more, trying to pitch the batters differently the second time through, he's not as aggressive and he kind of tries to nibble and it's the same thing that kind of infuriates us about Newcomb, is that he has really good stuff and then he tries to, like, you know, exist on the fringes of the strike zone. And I don't think he necessarily needs to do that. But he's not a guy that I worry about so much. It's just that it's at the same time, he does have some risk in that that's something that has been true since he's been a professional baseball player. In Gausman's case, for him to be good in a start, his splitter has to be like something he can throw for strikes consistently. And this year and in, you know, the little bit we saw him in spring, like, it just doesn't seem like he's been able to really do that. And I don't know if that's something to, like, you know, there's a little, he obviously had an injury and, you know, there's some rust involved. This is really, keep in mind, it's the second week of April. So it's like, you know, drawing too many conclusions is kind of a dangerous thing to do anyway. But, you know, he just hasn't looked particularly crisp to me. It's the same thing with Newcomb. It's just that, you know, it's not a question of, you know, how hard someone's throwing or that sort of stuff. It's just whether or not, like, he's missing bats. And, like, Gausman doesn't really seem to be – he seems to be giving up a lot of contact. And for guys like, you know, Gausman who seemingly have good stuff, for guys like Newcomb that seemingly have good stuff and you're not missing bats, there's kind of – you wonder if something else is going on and what needs to be corrected. So I don't know. I've always been like, hey, Gausman's a perfectly reasonable rotation arm, but, you know, I think that for the people who were, like, you know, expecting him to be, like, a big upgrade in the rotation, I'm much more skeptical about that.
Yeah, he's a 3-4 for me, which is fine. And we'll see. You know, the splitter is a good point that you're bringing up there. He was really good in the first start, but hasn't looked as crisp, I agree. And the second start was obviously not very good. So we'll see how he looks moving forward. We just wanted to address that briefly. More positively, over the weekend, I guess Saturday and Sunday only, he had a couple of bombs, back-to-back days, home runs from Markakis, which is more surprising, and then Donaldson, who is coming out of it after some, I guess, quote-unquote, struggles early on. Two notes here before I let you go. Markakis did not hit a home run in more than 250 plate appearances. He went like the last almost 2 months of last season without hitting a home run, and then hadn't hit one at all and this year until Saturday, and then he hit one 2 days in a row. But he's actually been good. Like, his numbers look good.
And that first home run he hit was a rocket.
Yeah, I'm not making fun of him, honestly. It's just that we talked about the power outage quite a bit last year. And it's just been so long and so many plate appearances that it's worth noting. But like, his Statcast profile looks good. He's hitting the ball really hard. His exit velocity's up this year, even over last year. And he looks good again. And maybe he'll be able to keep that going with a little bit more rest. He's obviously had some off days so far. And all the position moving around that Camargo's doing is going to allow some guys to take some rest. But he does look good so far.
Yeah, I mean, like, most of the lineup honestly looks really good if you're not looking at, you know, Ender Inciarte at all.
My, Eric. I don't want to do it today.
You don't want to do it today?
We have to just because of the lineup thing, because the lineup finally changed on Sunday. They finally took Ender out of the leadoff spot against a righty, and they went with Ozzie. Obviously, they've been going with Ozzie against lefties all year, but now after Ender's really, really slow start again, they've gone with Ozzie on Sunday, and I guess it worked, quote unquote. I hate that rationale, but just the right move, frankly.
Ozzie faced two different righties in this game. One was Jacob DeGrom, the other one was Familia, and he got a single off DeGrom and a triple off Familia.
Yeah, I mean,
and the hardest contact that Ender Inciarte has made in the last week and a half was the bunt single that he put down tonight.
I think people that listen to us know that we're not going to advocate a change based on one game's results.
Right.
But Ender's been bad for a while. He had a nice uptick.
He's not a leadoff hitter. He's a valuable baseball player.
I was tweeting about this the other day with someone. I think it might have been yesterday. I can't remember who it was. So my apologies if it was you. The upside of Ender is maybe he gets back to his 3-year form before last year, when he was like a league average hitter. High batting average guy, but with very little power. That's like his ups. That's like his, not maybe not ceiling, but that's definitely a higher end outcome for him right now. And even that guy is not someone you're in love with as a leadoff hitter. So, you know, the notion that he needs to stay there just never made sense to any of us. We've been over this quite a few times. I understood it a little bit more when they were at least not leading him off against lefties. That was a move I endorsed. Still, I wouldn't have done it at all. And I think, you know, I guess maybe it's a blessing in disguise to some degree that he started off slow, and maybe Snicker, who we kind of know was the only one that wanted to do this. Anthopoulos kind of said on the record a couple times over the winter that he did not want Inciarte to lead off. Not in that many terms, but he was kind of pushing for Acuna, and he was certainly not in the Inciarte camp publicly. So I think, if nothing else, this might have pushed Schnitt away from that. So if you want to count that as a positive, by all means. I do, you know, Ender's better than this, I think.
He's not this bad.
No, we're not. And honestly, it's worth pointing out again that he is someone, because he is so good as a defender at a premium position, you can afford for him not to hit well, and he's still a valuable player.
Especially with Dansby's hitting. That's the thing.
That was the big thing we talked about over the winter. Like, it's tough to have two dead spots, but if Dansby's hitting, then that really helps. But Ender should be hitting eighth, frankly. Or ninth. They tried ninth last year. I kind of like that for someone like Ender and his profile. I'm not sure that Snicker liked that, because, in fact, I think he even said that he didn't like it. But if there was ever a guy in this lap that you might want to go to a ninth spot, it could be Ender. Regardless, he should be hitting at the bottom of the order. That's kind of, we knew that already, and we're just going to say it again now.
it's concerning for me that, not like, now that we have access to StatCast and like there's so much publicly available information, when Nick Markakis's average sprint speed is a mile per hour faster than you are, and you're like, and your game is predicated off base running and speed, and like, that's kind of the approach that you take. That makes things really tough when you're like trying to lay down bunts and beat out infield singles, and you're just not going to do it, you know. And then you also have one of the lowest exit velocities on the team, and it's not just all the other guys are hitting the ball really hard. We have a few guys who are. I mean, Ozzie, Acuna, Donaldson, Freddie, they're all hitting the ball really hard. Markakis too. But when you have a guy like Ender, who's just nothing in his profile looks good right now.
No, if you look at the baseball savant stuff and look at everyone else in the order and then look at Ender, it's like, oh my, it's jar. And again, it's 2 weeks. We're not piling on too much here. It's just when you go from a pretty low baseline already, it makes it, I'm sure there's some confirmation bias in there somewhere, but again, even at his peak as a hitter, he was not an overwhelming hitter. He was someone who hit for a high batting average, so people got really excited. The 200 hits, all that stuff. There's a lot of value in that. And if you could guarantee me that he hits 300 with a 350 on base percentage, that's pretty useful. But when compared to guys like Ozzy or Ronald, he's not as good as those guys. Even at his absolute peak, he's just not going to be as valuable. And with the way that teams are approaching this stuff, power does matter. It matters less at leadoff, but it does matter. Like, you have to take that all into account. It's not only about batting average and getting on. You know, his on-base percentage was fine. 350 is very solid. But if you combine that with no power and all that stuff, it's a little bit rough. So, you know, I was willing to get the benefit of the doubt at the beginning of the season because they went with Ozzy against lefties. My cross was always going to be Ender against lefties was insane. And they at least didn't do that. And now we'll see how long this lasts. You know, Ozzy's been really good. I mean, what have you made of Ozzy's left-handed swing? Because he's looked pretty good.
Oh, yeah. He's shortened things up a little bit. And he's looked good against righties. He just has. I mean, it might not always be his strongest suit. Like, his right-handed swing's better. You know what I mean? Like, he clearly is more at ease driving the ball when he's batting as a righty. But, I mean, left-handed swing, he's made some adjustments where he can kind of catch up on, you know, that those high fastballs that he started getting a heavy dose of for, like, basically most of the second half last year. And, he seems like he's just a different hitter from the right side. He seems like he's put in a lot of work, which is great because, you know, the Braves needed it. I mean, Camargo's kind of the same way. His left-handed swing's getting better, too. And when you have those guys making those adjustments and you are trying to play matchups, you start running out of places where Ender is particularly valuable. I mean, Ender hasn't been really good against anybody, you know, lefties or righties this year. And you have a guy like Camargo on your bench right now where you can put him in left field. And he's been in we talked about this in the off season that we were hoping that Camargo was going to get time in the outfield. He's seen games out there and he has not looked bad out there at all.
It's been fun. Yep.
Yep. And
huge arm. We know that. I mean,
yeah, he's got a cannon.
The thing is, like, I'm not going to come on here now after 2 weeks and just, like, I've seen some people like calling for Ender to like be a backup now. I'm not there yet. I understand some of that. I think you have to keep in mind his defensive value is really good. And if you pair him and Acuna together in the outfield, you're very good on defense. I know Marquez has some limitations, but with positioning, all that stuff, that's a really good defensive outfield. And that takes a hit a little bit when you go to Camargo. You know, even with Ronnie in center, Ender's really good on defense. So I understand the impulse to do that sometimes. And I've been totally fine with the free use of Ender in the outfield and giving Inciarte days off, and Marquez is the same. I also would not, right now in the middle of April, make Ender a bench player and make him a bit guy. I'm not quite there for that yet. If he doesn't hit,
he's not a 150 hitter. That's just not
no. If it's June and he's, you know, with a 60 WRC plus, then we could talk about it. But until then, you know, he's still providing enough value where you kind of just got to leave him there. And the whole point again is to have Camargo be someone who can play everywhere and give everybody days off. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed on that. It's going well so far. But yeah,
I was getting some angry tweets as like, where's Camargo? Where's Camargo that first week?
He's playing all the time.
And now he's playing all the time, which is what he should be doing. And he's doing just fine. Had himself a hit RBI in this game, drew a walk. He's just the same dude he's been, and he can play everywhere. As long as he's continually getting time all over the place. He was at shortstop tonight. We've seen him in left field. We'll see him at third base. As long as I continue to do this and we keep seeing the lineups that we've seen recently most of the time, then there's really nothing to complain about. The team's playing well and this offense is clicking. You just have to hope that the bullpen doesn't, you know, give up five runs.
Yeah, he has 30 play appearances. It's April 14th. He's playing plenty enough.
Yep.
He got sort of a slow start, but has been heating up a little bit recently. I'm not worried at all about Camargo, and he'll play enough. And this is without an injury. I mean, someone along the way is going to get hurt. That's just the way that this works. I don't know who it's going to be, but someone's going to get hurt.
If it could stop being the catchers, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be good. But I mean, one of these guys, outside of catcher, will get hurt at some point this season, and then you're going to see Camargo every day for as long as that guy's out. So no worries, he's going to play. He's going to play enough. Quickly on the guys that, to various degrees, got kind of shaded for slow starts, and I'm using slow starts in giant quotations right now. Josh Donaldson is now fully broken out, has a 131 WRC plus now with some real power. No worries at all there. It was never bad. You know, his Statcast profile was always good. He was hitting the ball hard, getting a little bit unlucky early on. He's now broken out. And, of course, the good son, Ronnie Acuna.
Those were his
favorite. The sophomore slump of 2019.
That wasn't even my favorite one of those. Did you see this 92.9 tweet?
Oh, no.
Since Ronald Acuna signed his $100 million contract extension, he only has two hits and has struck out four times.
Well, here's
it was like a three-game sample.
Here is Ronald Acuna's slash line for the season. 302, 431, 642.
Oh.
He has five home runs. It's April 14th. Two steals as well, and a 174 WRC plus.
Is that good, Brad? Is that good?
I think it is. Yes, he's very good at the baseball. No worries about Ronald Acuna. I wanted to at least bring that up. So Donaldson and Acuna, still good. Donaldson was, I guess, a little bit more worrisome because he was actually a little bit older. But if you looked at the profile, it was
he was still hitting the ball hard. If you actually watch the games, then you're like, well, yeah. I mean, he almost killed a couple pitchers. You know, like a couple line drives. That the only reason they caught him is because they were trying to preserve their long-term
well-being.
Health.
Yeah. Those guys are fine and no worries. And we'll at some point do a deeper dive into some like early season trends when we don't have a 30-minute Ozzie Albies conversation on the podcast. But just some stuff that I wanted to at least briefly hit on. Couple news items before we get out of here. Folty's coming back pretty soon. Mark Bowman did some projected starters. These have not been announced yet. The Braves have not announced their starters for this week. Bowman was guessing and said Tuesday, Max Fried, Wednesday, Kevin Gausman, Thursday, Tuki Toussaint, Friday, Julio Teheran, and Saturday, Mike Foltynewicz, because Folty has one more rehab start on Monday in Gwinnett. So Snicker said he wanted to see him throw 7 innings or 90 pitches. I don't know which. That's kind of a weird delineation line. But he's getting there, and obviously Folty being healthy and good would be very helpful considering he's the best pitcher on the team.
Yeah, I mean, and his first start, Gwinnett, was obviously really good. It was like 5 no-hit innings or whatever. The second one was a little bit not quite as good. But, like, you don't worry. You just worry about them being healthy and that their stuff looking good. In AAA, you know, in the minors, rehab, since weird things happen, and, you know, you're trying them, like, hey, I want to work on this pitch and only this pitch to see how that's coming out. You know, they're not treating it a lot of times like normal starts. They're trying to figure out, like, hey, if I throw my breaking ball this many more times than normal, how does my arm feel? And things like that. It's just what happens. So, you know, you can't really read into the results too much. And, you know, hopefully after this next one where he kind of, you know, can air it out and see how things work, and he'll be back soon, because the starters aren't necessarily concerned, but it would be nice to kind of have another guy who's a little bit more consistent in there right now.
Yeah, so we just named the 5 projected guys for this week. That includes Folty. Another guy that could be on the horizon is your son, Mike Soroka.
Yes.
Who is he wasn't quite as good on Friday after being dominant before that, but still, like, he's coming pretty soon here. And if he's healthy, I think he is a safer bet to be good right away than someone like Kyle Wright, for instance. Tukey we just saw be great, so I can't really say that necessarily. But Soroka would be someone you have to consider for a rotation spot if he's available to come back and do that. He's going to be coming pretty soon. I'd imagine he'll be up at some point soon if he's healthy and good.
Yeah, I mean, the Braves could, like, you know, if they want to especially add, like, fold in extra off days for some of these pitchers. You know,
it's
going to
be like an 8-man rotation for a while, I think.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing a lot of different guys, which is, like, a lot of people were asking me kind of, like, how many innings are these pitchers going to throw, and I'd give these low numbers, and they're like, well, we need guys throwing 200 innings, and I'm like, I will be shocked if anyone on this team gets 200 innings this year, because
there's going to be... was the one guy that had a chance, and then he got hurt, so no, that's not going to happen anymore.
Yeah, I just really feel like, some pitchers I feel very strongly about, you know, I need to be pitching every fifth day because that's just my routine. But the way this team's constructed, especially with all these starting pitching prospects and who they're going to be like, it's going to be next man up. You know, they're going to give me everyone opportunities, giving guys rest. And, you know, maybe they'll be doing little bullpen stints here and there just to kind of keep their arms fresh if need be. But, you know, Soroka's another guy obviously I'm very high on, and I do think he's healthy, and hopefully it's, you know, it's something where he'll get his opportunity again. It's just kind of weird right now as to kind of, especially with Max Fried pitching so well. He's been insane.
He's been, like, lights out.
Yeah, like untouchable.
Ridiculous. Yeah, back-to-back starts are just absolutely unhittable nonsense from Max Free. I'm not sure it's going to continue, but he's been really good, man.
Well, I mean, look, if he's throwing his curveball and his fastball for strikes, I don't know what you, because I mean, his changeup, you don't, I mean, at that point, you don't really want to throw your changeup for strikes. You just want to throw it because they think it's the fastball. And when he's piping 96 in there and you start swinging it and you realize, oh, that's 84, you know, like there's nothing you can really do. Even if it's, you know, even if it's off the plate, it makes it really hard for righties to square him up. And, you know, he's already kind of impossible for lefties. So if he's throwing them both for strikes and, you know, he has his blister issues under control, I mean, we've always thought he could be really, really good. He had the best stuff in the system, probably right behind Tukey, just in terms of raw stuff. But it's just, you know, these blister issues and just command issues that he had. And right now he just looks unhittable. I mean, you see these like three pitch at bats he has where it's just like, you know, he throws 97, he throws 95 in, and then he just throws that hook and like the batter looks like he's about to fall over. You know,
yeah, he's been genuinely absurd. I mean, it's a small sample, but he's been really, really good. So I guess to your point earlier, I think you said this, but the stars haven't been the problem. The stars have been not like ridiculously great or anything other than Fried, but they've been awful.
They've had some bad, there's been some bad starts, but there's been also some like, you know, like Julio has had like left before that awful inning he had in Colorado. He was like good in that first part of that start.
His ERA is 4.71 right now. And the majority of the bad stuff from that is that one inning in Colorado. I don't think he was very good today necessarily, but again, six innings, one earned run. Like, he didn't look great again, but he kind of, you know, it's just what it is. He's been acceptable so far.
Yeah, he's just kind of the guy that defies the BABIP gods. You know, he's just, I don't know what, I mean, but being a fly ball pitcher is just always a dangerous thing, because if you're a little bit off, you're no longer a fly ball pitcher, you're a batting practice pitcher. And, like, you know, we've seen games where that's what happens to Julio, but...
Well, he had 100% strand rate today, by the way. Just for... That's another one of those things where, like, that's not going to always happen, but, you'll take it.
His slider has looked legitimately like a very good pitch this year. Fastball, not so much.
No, you know, he's been better in the overall sense. But when you're sitting, you know, 90... Let's be charitable. 91? Fastball. Yeah. I mean, it's not
90-91.
And you gotta locate it, or you're absolutely gonna get bludgeoned. That's kind of where you are. I mean, he's fine. I don't want to go too deep into Julio either, but you know, they have seven or eight, maybe even nine starters. If you get into the Bryce Wilson, Kyle Wright zone, you get into like 9 or 10 starters, who are available, which is kind of insane. You know, the five guys this week plus Soroka, Wright, Wilson, Newcomb. Is still available. He's still around.
Like you kind of forget. Like, yeah, Newcomb's still actually a player.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Sean Newcomb, who had a mid-2s ERA through July of last season in the majors. So yeah, a lot of arms doesn't necessarily mean, and I'm still on the corner. That does not mean that you're going to be like great as a rotation. It does not mean that the rotation is a strength this year, because that's one of my points that I made in March was there's a lot of talent in the rotation. It might be good, but it's not a strength of the team, in my opinion, right now, as an overall standing. That could change.
I don't think it's going to kill the team either.
That's kind of where I was going. Like, I think it's going to be okay. It won't be this overwhelming strength unless Folti is just Folti in capital letters again. That'd be really helpful.
And Max Fried wins Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Or I guess he can't now. But
I don't think he's eligible. But yeah, still, he's really good. Anyway, we're rambling now, but it's I think it's generally a pretty good week for the Braves. I'm every couple days tweeting out like a list of the five projection systems that I look at, and every couple days it goes up a win or two. Like that, now the Braves are projected to win somewhere in the 86 win range when it was actually 83 or 84 2 weeks ago. So it's ticking up. That means generally positive things are happening. If it's not always in the standings, they're winning games, and this week was a 4-2 week. You know, of all the frustrations that were happening in the middle of the week with the snow out and then back-to-back losses, you still won 4 out of 6 games, and that's all you need to do.
Yep, and right now the division kind of looks like what we kind of thought it was going to be. Very close. I mean, the Philadelphia, the Braves, and the Mets are separated by half a game right now.
No one's
running away with anything. The Braves are staying just with everybody, and they haven't. And this is with, you know, a kind of a slow start from Donaldson, a quote-unquote slow start from Acuna, and, you know, having all these issues in the bullpen. If, you know, there's room for more from this club, so, you know, there's nothing to be concerned about, I don't think. Not yet.
The bullpen's the only concern I have. Like, the actual concern that I have is the bullpen. But
yeah, but I feel like some of these guys, there's just no possible way they stay employed. I just don't.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's going to be a different group in a couple of weeks, if not months, for sure.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that when it comes. But Eric, we've probably done enough since it's now midnight or so on the East Coast. Please plug yourself. I know we talked about Road to Atlanta a little bit earlier, but please sell that and anything else that you would like to. Tell me where they can follow your work, my friend.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at leprechaun with a K. If you have trouble finding me, just look in Brad's mentions and I'll eventually be making fun of him about something. Also, the podcast that I host each week is The Road to Atlanta, which is a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. That comes out every Thursday evening. And I'm trying to line up a guest this week. I was kind of hoping that there was one in particular, but I haven't heard back from that individual yet. But I'm going to try to have someone on the show for this week, beyond just the normal hosts. Matt Powers, Gaurav Vidak, and I are doing that show. It's a lot of fun. We talk a lot about prospects, kind of recapping the week, and then we'll delve into, you know, specific issues, and, you know, we try to have a pretty guest heavy show as well, just because you want to get as many perspectives on prospects. And honestly, you can only talk about the same prospects over and over again on a weekly basis without, you know, having some sort of weird or new angle on it. So that's what we're trying to accomplish. It's been a lot of fun to have bringing the show back. And yeah, so just make sure you listen to that each week. And all you have to do is to be subscribed to whatever feed you subscribe to Talking Chop on, because it's in the same feed and you'll be able to download it, and make sure you download it.
Yep. Please subscribe via whatever podcast platform that you would like to. Leave 5-star feedback. That really helps us as well. But, grab your friend's phone and subscribe on that phone,
yep,
or your wife's phone, or your husband's phone, or your son's phone, or your daughter's phone, whatever you want to do. Get creative and help us out. I really appreciate that. Let's game the system together.
Absolutely.
I don't normally recommend that, but let's just go ahead and do that now. Since it's midnight, I don't really care anymore.
Just game it.
But yeah, also listen. It'd be helpful if you listen to the podcast. If you don't like me, Road to Atlanta is the place to avoid me. And please subscribe to this podcast and download, and you can avoid me at all costs. So, Eric, thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk very, very soon. And people will, even if you don't like listening to this podcast, you can hear Eric in a couple of days probably on Road to Atlanta. So it's coming.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.